On to item 9, consider and take possible action regarding East Fire's request to depool group number 8. Gail, did you want to introduce this item?
Yes. I wanted to go over item number 9. So Sarah has received a request from the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District to depool the cost group that they are in with Contra Costa County Fire Protection District. Back as way of background, back in 2009, CICERA was depooled, which increased the number of cost groups by quite a bit that CICERA had. At that time, there were a number of considerations into determining the cost groups and which employers would be included in each cost group. One of those considerations was the actual number of employees that they had, active employees, because with those with fewer numbers, you will experience possibly more volatility in rates and some other items. So that was one of the considerations. And so we have Paul Angelo here today from Siegel to provide some more information regarding depooling and the impact of depooling and why a plan even wants to depool, because some plans don't even depool. and so at this point, I wanted to turn it over to Paul Angelo. I did want to mention that I'm not aware of any other employers from 2009 until now that have requested to be depooled. And with that, I will turn that over to Paul Angelo.
Thank you, Gail. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
And I'm joined here with Andy Young as well. And let's see, I think I'm going to, we have a PowerPoint deck here. Do we know if I'm able to share that? Here we go. Okay, let me open it up. Okay, give me 1 second to open up the PowerPoint. We'll see if this works like every other platform. Applications, that's what I want. There we go. And we're going to pick this one. I'm going to do that. And I'm also going to, because I have to go like this because I have a little tiny screen, I'm going to stop sharing my webcam because it frightens people. And let me get this out of the way. Oops. Trying to get this collection of, there we go. That's that. Okay. So now we open this up. All right. Can everybody see the full screen there?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So this is Paul Angelo with Siegel in San Francisco. I'm joined by my colleague Andy Young. And as agendized, we're here to talk about a request received from East Contra Costa Fire Protection District. We'll be calling that East Fire going forward, to be depooled within cost group 8, which means they would be depooled from Contra Costa Fire, which we'll call CONFIRE, because those are the only two employers in that cost group. We're gonna go through some background similar to what Gail described. What is their request? What is pooling? What's the history of pooling here at Contra Costa? But really the key is gonna be, not only is East Fire requested to depool, but they've requested a particular methodology. And so the board will need to decide if they grant the decision to depool, whether to depool on one of two methods. We will show you detailed results under the two methods. We'll actually give you a sort of a preview of those results early on. And we'll really talk about, from an actuarial standpoint and sort of an actuarial fairness standpoint, what is the difference between the two methods. I will try to sort of pause for questions. I'll probably go through most of the background, then we'll see if we can get some questions at that point before we actually get to the sort of the decision points that are before the board today. So East Fire's request.
So now we're on slide number 3, right, Paul?
Yes, we're on slide number 3. Andy's job is to remind me to mention what slide we're on, because I always forget to do that. So on slide number 3, their request, we have a number of cost groups, as Gail mentioned, and they are in cost group 8, which has these two employers, which we'll call East Fire, and then the larger employer, Contra Costa County Fire Protection District, CONFIRE. They requested to be depooled effective with the December 31, 2019 valuation. Now, East Fire also has some general employees, not safety employees, who are in cost group one, and they are not included in this request. Now, the idea is if they are depooled, then in the future, contribution rates for East Fire would be based solely on the assets and the member demographics of East Fire. Well, the demographics are easy. We receive census data person by person, and the East Fire employees are identified, so we can very easy calculate the liability and the normal cost just for the East Fire members. The thing is, right now, there's one pool of assets that underwrites the cost of both East Fire and Confire, and so at the point of depooling, we'd have to divide the assets, and that's where there are two methods for doing that, one which we will call allocating on liability, another called allocating on payroll, and East Fire is requesting the liability-based depooling when it comes to determining that initial split of the assets in cost group eight. Sometimes this thing moves and sometimes it doesn't. There we go. So I don't want this to be entirely a cost-driven conversation, and we'll have a lot of information about cost in the past, but we were asked to sort of just to give you a sense of scale up front. So we went back and said if depooling was applied in the 2019 valuation, using the and that is the request that East Fire is making. First of all, the employer rates, you know, they always have an unfunded liability piece and a normal cost piece. When it comes to depooling, those two behave very differently. And we'll see this in more detail in a later slide, but if you depool based on the demographics of the East Fire folks are actually would see an increase in their normal cost rate, and then Confire of about 0.66%, 0.66%, and then Confire, it's a much larger employer, would see a decrease by about 0.06%. So that's the normal cost. But the real action is on the unfunded actuarial accrued liability and the amount to pay toward that. And in that case, the contribution rate towards the unfunded for East Fire would decrease by 37.85% of pay, about 38% of pay. And there'd be a corresponding increase in the UAL rate for Confire of about 3.4%. There also would be some impact on the member rates. The member rates are affected only by the normal cost. For legacy tier A, we would see East Fire's go down by 18 basis points on average. And we would see the Confire go up by 0.02, 2 basis points on average. For PEPRA tier D, about a 3% of pay decrease for East Fire at about 0.02%, 0.65 for Confire. And tier E, there would be no change. By the way, Andy, any comments on this? We will be going through this in more detail, but this is really just sort of a summary here, and we'll talk later why these behave so different.
I think the board may remember seeing some of these presentational material. I think the dollar impact was provided back in 2019, but when the time comes, I would definitely share those cost ramifications with the board.
Thank you. All right, now what about effect on other cost groups? Well, because we only have these two employers in...
Oh, I'm sorry, Paul, to interject. So now we're on slide five, right?
Now we're on slide five. Thank you. Yeah, so if it is approved, and this is true whether you depool on liability or payroll, if the request to depool is granted, then that simply means that future contribution rates for East Fire will be based only on a percent of payroll basis, just like they are now, using only the actual experience from East Fire. Exactly the same for Confire, and there is no change in the pooling arrangements for anybody else, any of the other cost groups that have more than one employer. Normal cost rates will continue to be pooled, and the contribution rates will continue to be pooled and paid in proportion to payroll. So it's really no change, even going forward, for East Fire and Confire. That is, the mechanics will look similar going forward, except they'll be separate, and there's no change in any other employer in any other cost group. Now I'm on slide six. So what is pooling? Pooling combines the actual experience of two or more employers when developing a retirement plan's funding requirements. Actual experience is combined in depooling. So salary increases, terminations, service disability, all the demographic experience is pooled along with investment experience. And the contribution rates, both the normal cost and the unfunded liability, are basically the same for everyone in the pool. And there are other, one of the main reasons that we have defined benefit plan, just so that individual members don't have to bear their own longevity risk. We talk about longevity pooling is why we have pension plans in the first place. And of course, other actuarial products, insurance rates and such also use pooling. So pooling is a very common approach for anything where the promise or the transaction is based upon experience that involves human lives and the financial performance of their individual shares. I'm now going to slide 7. Historically, the 1937 Act retirement systems, different employers offering the same benefit formulas have classically been put in the same rate pool. So you would only have different rates if you had different benefits. And the idea is if the employers are providing the same benefit, then they should be making the same contribution rate. Now there are considered, and you think about this differently for smaller employers versus larger employers. Gail mentioned this one in passing, that the main advantage of pooling for smaller employers is that short-term variations in experience where the experience differs from the assumptions are shared with other employers in the pool. If you only have 4 employees and one of them becomes disabled, that can change your cost dramatically. Whereas if you're in a pool with a much larger group, you just get much more stable plan experience and stable contribution rates. Now, the con is that the smaller employers, they end up paying higher or lower rates over the long term if their experience is different from other employers, from the larger employers. So you can end up with what's called cross subsidies of rates, where if the two employers had always been separate, then because of their individual experience being different, they would have had different rates. And we will see a good textbook example of this kind of cross subsidy here in cost group 8 when we look at the later results. For larger employers, generally, the larger employers don't need pooling for the stability, and so their contribution rates are generally less affected by year-to-year experience. And then the unfunded rate, if at the point that you depool, you can have a change in cost for the larger employer based upon the method that's used to allocate the assets, and that will be actually the board's main decision today if it decides to depool, because we'll see that there is a shifting cost between Confire and EastFire, depending on which method is used for the depool. Okay, now going to slide 8. Here's the history on behind pooling cost group 8 at Contra Costa. Now, as Gail mentioned, before 2009, Contra Costa only had 4 rate groups, and this goes with my earlier comment. You had general and safety. And within general and safety, you had those with enhanced benefits and those without enhanced benefits. All the experience was pooled for all the general employers that had the same benefit and all the safety employers that had the same benefit. Now, there was a lot of discussion about whether different practices by different employers were affecting their individual costs, and then those individual practices and those individual costs are then being shared with other employers. That led to the project of considering depooling in Contra Costa, which ultimately was enacted effective with the 7/31/2009 valuation. The intent was to try to, if in fact there was differential employer experience, the intent was to try to depool before some of that happened. So we actually went back to 2002, did a depooling calculation, and then rolled everything forward from there to get to the 2009 results. And we did use what is called the payroll method, which is to say we allocated the unfunded liability and therefore the assets were allocated in proportion to payroll. That was consistent with other policies that were in place at the time. And then, as I say, we rolled the, and what that does, and we'll discuss this later, the idea is what do you want to have remain unchanged before versus after pooling? And the payroll method is designed to say that the unfunded liability contribution rates will remain unchanged after pooling. The other method that we're going to talk about, the liability method, it also leaves something unchanged, but what it leaves unchanged is the funded ratio. And those turn out to be two different results. And then, as I said, we took the 2002 sort of a what-if depooling and rolled it forward to 2009. Now, there's a big question of how big does an employer have to be so that they could stand on their own, that they would be big enough to withstand the additional volatility that comes with being depooled. And the choice chosen was 50 employees, and East Fire was right on the cusp, and so was not deep pooled. There was some discussion whether to make an exception for East Fire, but as the decision was made by the board, East Fire was left in a pool with Confire in what we now call Rate Group 8.
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
About that decision, since they were right on the line, did East Fire provide any, in your recollection, did East Fire take a position one way or the other?
I'm trying to remember that. I don't recall that immediately. And I don't know if there's anyone here. Andy, I don't think you were in the room at the time. Andy normally remembers everything. But I don't recall at the time. I just know there was a lot of discussion back and forth.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so that's it for slide 8. I'm moving on to slide 9. So here comes East Fire's specific request. We have two slides on this. Deep pooling means, as we said a couple times, that the contribution rates for East Fire would be calculated based only on their assets and their demographics. The demographics is the easy part. We would use their member data to calculate their normal cost. And now be careful, their accrued liability, not the unfunded, but the accrued liability. Both those numbers are simply calculated one participant at a time. So let's talk about normal costs. First of all, we estimated we actually looked at this using the demographics of members in the 2018 valuation, which is the last one that we have complete. It turns out that if you separated them out, that the East Fire members on their own actually would have a higher normal cost than they do in the combined group. And correspondingly, because the total adds up to the same, the Confire would go down slightly. And so at least as far as the normal cost is concerned, deep pooling would you know, there's a little bit of cross subsidy here, but it means that as far as normal cost is concerned, actually Confire is subsidizing East Fire because if you separate them out, it means that East Fire goes up and Confire goes down. Okay. But
so Paul, if I may, I think this is the place where we can give the board some order of magnitude on the cost. So even though it may look like 0.66% of payroll is big, but the whole payroll for East Fire was only about $3.3 million. So at least with respect to the normal cost, this does not turn out to be, I would believe, a big ticket item because it was in the $20,000 range per year.
Thank you. But I think the financial driver of this conversation is really about the unfunded liability. And so that's why it's going to make a difference. When we determine the initial asset share for East Fire, it depends on a method. And there are two methods that we're going to look at in detail. One is called, we're now on slide 10, one is called the payroll method, which we mentioned earlier, which is what was used in 2009. And the other is what we'll call the liability method, the method based on the actuarial accrued liability. So you're going to hear all through this, the payroll method and either the AAL method or the liability method. Those are the same. East Fire is requesting that we do the allocation using the liability method. Okay. Now, there's a substantial difference in results, which will be the bulk of our results for this presentation. Now, we received a request from East Fire in 2019, originally actually from their legal counsel, which also requested an adjustment on the pension obligation. Okay, is there a question? No, I think that was an echo. Because somebody probably has a mic on. They had also asked, when we did the deep pooling back in 2009, one of the differences is that Confire had issued pension obligation bonds and East Fire had not. Now, if they had been depooled in 2009, well, then the pension obligation bond and the earnings on those assets would have been applied only to the Confire group. But because they were pooled, but one of them issued POBs and the other did not, we had to make an adjustment for that. And that was done in a way that had to do using assumed earnings. And one of the things that East Fire had their actuary look into was doing that a different way. And that was originally included in their request that was submitted by legal counsel, I think, in May of 2019. That was discussed at the July 24th board meeting. However, when we received the current request, which was received in 2020, that is no longer there. And while that's not necessarily an actuarial issue, it certainly means that East Fire has, they appear to have narrowed their request to focus only on going forward, how we would allocate assets. And they're no longer asking that we go retroactively and make a change in how the pension obligation bond credits were handled. And so there has been some scaling down of the scope of the East Fire quest from 2019 to 2020. So I just want to observe that in the record here. Okay, now going to slide 11. So here come the methods. We're first going to talk about the payroll method. Then we'll talk about the liability method, the AAL method. Okay. And these two slides, slide 11 and slide 12, look very similar. They sort of try to address the same points under the two methods. So what we would do is we would, this is 2018. Andy, should this say 2018 or should it say 2019?
18,
of course. 18, of course. My mistake. So then this is the request. The request is to go back to back to date. So what we would do is we would take the unfunded liability for the entire cost group 8, and we would allocate it in proportion to payroll. So you take East Fire's payroll divided by total cost group 8 payroll. That's a fraction. You apply that to the unfunded liability, and that becomes the unfunded liability for East Fire now that they're depooled. And correspondingly, take Confire's payroll divided by the total cost group 8 payroll, apply that to the unfunded liability, and that would be the unfunded liability now that they're depooled. It's worth noting that the way the arithmetic works out, depooling the unfunded in proportion to payroll is exactly the same as allocating the assets in proportion to payroll. So what we're going to end up talking about is, do we allocate the assets in proportion to payroll, or do we allocate the assets in proportion to liability on the next slide? Now, the reason that you do it this way, and the reason that the Contra Costa has generally used this as kind of their default way of splitting up costs within a pool, is, and the reason that this was used in 2009 is, what that means is, after you depool, whatever your unfunded rate was in the pool, your unfunded rate would be the same. So the first time that we have separate rates for East Fire and Confire, the unfunded liability contribution rate for each of those two employers would be the same as it was before they depooled. And this was also the policy motive back in 2009. The idea was not to, to change the way the cost, the contribution rates are being allocated. And so the idea was to find a method that will allocate the assets in a way that leaves the contribution rates unchanged. So that it's not a coincidence. The second bullet is actually why you depool in proportion to payroll, is to accomplish this this goal. So that is consistent with the method implicit in developing the pooled unfunded liability contribution rate. After all, everyone in a pool contributes the same unfunded rate. And so that means that if you have twice as much payroll, then you pay twice as much. We don't look at an individual liability, we look only at payroll. That is also the method that was used when you did the depooling in 2009. And then it is also the method that is in your withdrawal policy for terminating employers. That policy has been around for a long time. And when that policy was developed, the depooling by payroll was the common approach that actuaries use with the 37X systems. I mention that because on the next slide, we're going to see that the liability method was used for another one of your policies, one that was developed more recently. But the takeaway here is, you depool in proportion to payroll because it leaves the contribution rates unchanged, at least the moment after depool. Now, here is the AAL method, which again, shorthand, is called the liability method. Now, we would take East Fire and Confire's assets, and we would determine them by not allocating in proportion to payroll, but in proportion to the liability. So if, for example, East Fire's assets were only 10% of the total liability, I said that wrong. If East Fire's liability was 10% of the total liability, then they would get 10% of the assets. The reason that you do this is because it leaves the funded ratio. Look at the third bullet. It leaves the funded ratio unchanged. Now, the thing is, though, the unfunded liability rate under this method decreases for eSpy. We'll see how much in a later slide, and increases for Confi. Why is that? That's because Confire has a much larger share of liability than it does compared to its share of payroll. Now, these don't look very huge, but these are large numbers. So the idea is, where's my cursor? When we allocate in proportion to payroll, basically eSpy gets 8.3% of the unfunded liability in the assets, and Confire gets 91.7%. However, if you allocate in proportion to liability, even though Confire has about 92% of the active members in terms of payroll, they have 95% of the liability. And that's why when you allocate in proportion to liability, you get a different sharing of unfunded liability. So if you do this, it will change the unfunded liability contribution rate, which we'll see in a moment, but this it would not change the funded ratio. And we'll also see later on, we'll look at a slide with some demographics showing why it is that Confire's proportion of payroll is not the same as their proportion of the actual accrued liability. A lot of that has to do with how many retirees Confire has relative to how many retirees eSpy has. Now, this is not the first time you've seen this allocate in proportion to liability method. This is not the first, this will not be the first time that Contra Costa has used this liability method. You, not too long ago, adopted a new policy for declining employers. And the idea here was if you had an employer where their active headcount was going down, maybe because they're not adding new members. Well, if you allocate cost in proportion to payroll, and the person's payroll is getting smaller and smaller, they basically are getting out from under their cost commitment to the retirement system. And so when we see this, if you have a declining employer, the board policy is to allocate in proportion to liability because it's the liability that you're trying to keep the employer on the hook for. And again, I think I can safely say this is sort of an emerging practice when you have a situation where things are no longer going along status quo, that the liability approach is becoming more in favor. And that's one reason why it's on the table today. I'm going to slide 13. Now this is a lot of numbers. We were asked, and this part gets confusing, so I'm gonna go through this fairly quickly and we have questions we can go back. But we were asked by Confire to look not just at the effect in the current year, but to look at what would be the effect over the next 6 years, actually going back 1 year, the next five future years. What's happening here, what we described on the next couple of slides, and now here's where we get more actuary stuff. You may know that we're using these so-called layered amortization, and some of these layers drop off within cost group 8 around 2022. And so when that happens, you know, the cost allocation between Confire and eSpy will change, would have changed anyway. But let's look at this a little bit, and then we'll look at the at some of the answers on the next slide. You know, currently, from the 2018 valuation, the employer contribution rate for Confire is 65.26%, and for eSpy is 111.83%. Okay. And in the next valuation, in 2019, not a whole lot changes. This goes to 68, this goes to 115. And then looking rolling out here, you can see that even without depooling, when we get out to 2022, there's an extraordinary increase here. We'll talk about why that is. The same is true down here for eSpy. And this has nothing to do with depooling. But for eSpy, it's at 111, 115. When you get 2022, again, in the same year, there's about a 40-point drop, regardless of whether you depool. But now let's, for the first time, look at the total contribution rate impact for depooling. Okay. We'll start with Confire here. If we go to the 2019 valuation, and this means that we would have depooled in 2018 and rolled those results forward to 2019. If you depool under the payroll method, these two numbers remain substantially the same. And the same is true down here for EaseFire. You might wonder, why aren't they exactly the same? The reason they're not exactly the same is because we actually did the deep pooling back in 2018, and then we rolled it forward a year. But the idea is, under the payroll method, the contribution rates are substantially unchanged. Well, by the way, the other reason is that, remember, we already said that the normal cost rates would change. So what you really can see here is the difference between these two is only that 6 basis points that was due to depooling the normal cost. And if you go down here, 115.43 going up to 116.09, that is the 66 basis points that was a result of depooling normal cost. But again, under the payroll method, the unfunded liability component does not change. In contrast, under the liability method, the AAL method, actual accrued liability method, for ConFire, we would see an increase from the 68.86 to 72.23. We'll have this broken out on a table later. So that's a little less than, a little over 3 percentage points. Whereas for EaseFire, we see a dramatic drop from 116 78.24%. And again, this is because the current pooling, there's actually a subsidy. EaseFire is actually subsidizing the larger proportionate liability of ConFire. If we stop doing that, if we basically only have each employer fund their own liability, that basically shifts costs from EaseFire to ConFire. Now, we'll describe in the next slide what happens later on. When you get out here to 2022, two things happen. There's a pension obligation bond layer that I mentioned. That drops off. That makes ConFire's costs go up. There's also a restart layer. That drops off. That makes ConFire's costs go down. And of those two, the pension obligation bond is a little bit bigger, and so that's why this goes up. In contrast, down here with EaseFire, they did not issue a pension obligation bond. So when they get to 2022, all that happens is that the restart layer is fully amortized, and that's why they see this drop. And if you allocate based on payroll, these changes will be roughly the same. If you allocate based on liability, you can see there's a slight difference between them, just because once you split things up differently in 2019, when that layer drops off, EaseFire would actually get a slightly smaller share of that layer. Now, all of that stuff in these numbers is described in words here on slide 14. Let me just check something real quick here. Actually, 14 and 15. So some of this we've already said, but at least you can see the numbers broken out. There are two sources of unfunded liability rate differences even before depool. Okay. 2018, the reason that the ConFire rate is lower than EaseFire by about 46% is because only ConFire is getting a credit for the fact that they issued the pension obligation bonds. So they're already different. Similarly, again, this is before depooling. Out in 2022, the POB credit will be fully amortized. And when a credit is fully amortized, that makes your costs go up. The other thing is, when we restarted the whole amortization structure, that layer, what we call the restart layer, will be fully amortized. That is shared between EaseFire and ConFire, so they would both go down. And the reason that for ConFire, the net is an increase is because it turns out the POB credit was actually bigger than the amortization charge, cancel them both out, and that's why we saw that rate go up. So this is before depooling. All this was going to happen anyway. Okay. Now, after depooling, now here we get to see both the numbers we saw before and the unfunded liability change. We've already seen that the 2019 valuation, about 0.2% increase in normal cost and 0.06 decrease for ConFire. In 2022, we're going to see basically for normal cost, it's the same rate impact as before depooling. So all that we see is the fact that we have these normal costs changed. There's a net increase for a ConFire because the POB credit is bigger than the amortization charge, whereas for EaseFire, all that happens in 2022 is that the EaseFire amortization charge is fully amortized. Okay, now that's under the payroll method. Because under the payroll method, basically the only thing that changes is the normal cost, but there's no change when those layers drop off. They're going to behave the same way they would have without depooling, because that's the whole point of depooling on the payroll method. So payroll method, if the normal cost change we already saw, but the 2022 will be unaffected if we depool today based on payroll. Now, if instead, if we depool today based on the liability method, okay, well, the normal cost changes are exactly the same as under the payroll method. Here comes the big difference. For Confire, in the 2019 valuation, if we reallocate the assets in proportion to liability instead of implicitly doing it in proportion to payroll, because we're no longer going to see Confire being subsidized by East Fire, Confire will see a rate increase of 3.43%, and East Fire will see a rate decrease of about 38%. That's what we saw in the 2019 column. So this is really the punchline of the immediate cost impact. If you actually then go out to 2022, you're going to see a smaller decrease for East Fire, somewhat paradoxically, because they have a smaller share of the liability, they're going to get a smaller share of the restart amortization layer, and therefore they would see a smaller decrease. Basically, because their rate goes down by 37.85% in 2019, they don't get as much of an additional drop out in 2022. This is probably a good place just to pause for a moment. We've talked a lot about the Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry about that. So if I may add, 37-38% of payroll for East Fire would translate into an annual budget reduction in their contribution by about $1.2-1.3 million.
Say it again, Andy.
So the East Fire rate reduction that we saw a minute ago on the 37-38% of payroll will reduce their contribution budget by about $1.2-1.3 million each year.
Thank you. Paul?
Yes. Question for you or Andy. What's the same in terms of Confire's change of dollars for the 3.43%?
It actually would be the exact opposite. So that would be an increase in the East Fire, a deep reduction in the East Fire's contribution budget by about $1.2 million because their UAL rate would be lower by 37%. Conversely, for Confire, even though their rate is only, in air quotes, of course, going up by about 3.4% of payroll, but the dollar amount is exactly the same. Because for the two systems, for the two employers in rate group A, at the end of the allocation, the retirement board is asking those two employers collectively to contribute basically the same dollar amount.
Right.
The one group subsidy that goes down by the same dollar amount.
Thank you. And then one last time, Andy, that dollar amount is?
It's about $1.2 million.
$1.2 million. So the idea is the same $1.2 million, that's the amount of dollar cost that shifts. Well, that looks like 3.43% of Confire's much larger payroll, and looks like 37.85% of East Fire's much smaller payroll, but it's the same 1.2 million. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. So now we have, that's the question before the board. And so what are the things to consider? What are the things to consider in making a choice between one of these two methods to allocate assets on their proposed depool? So under the payroll method, some of this is a review. Under the payroll method, there's no change in the unfunded rate before and after depooling, but the funded ratios will change. This is consistent with the method that is implicit in developing the pooled UAAL contribution rates in the annual valuation. It's also consistent with the method that was used in 2009. And now this is a little bit more subjective observation. It's appropriate if the proportion of payroll among employers is stable, that's when this method works best, because then you don't have cross subsidies. In contrast, if we allocate under the liability method, the AAL method, there will be a change in the unfunded liability rate, which we just saw, but the funded ratio of the two employers would be the same before and after. What this does is to recognize that there are different proportions of payroll as compared to the proportion of liabilities for the different employers. We saw that back on slide 11, where it was 91 or 92% of 90% of payroll for Confire, but a higher percentage, more like in the 90s, in terms of liabilities. And we'll see that again in another slide in a second. This is generally going to be appropriate when you have a permanent change in the proportion of payroll among employers. That's why this is used in the declining employer policy. So it really is much more along the lines of, we're not just trying to maintain the same contribution rates. We want to basically sort of do a, it's almost like splitting up the household in a divorce. We want to look and see what liabilities does each employer have, and let's give them assets in proportion to their liabilities. That's why the funded ratios do not change. So it really is a matter of a more ongoing, stable approach where you assume that payrolls are going to maintain the same relationship, whereas under the liability method, you look more at the proportion of liabilities. Now, we get into, I use the word put fair in quotes here. They really differ in, as to what would be considered a fair allocation between the two. The payroll method is more consistent with the historical pooling of experience because it assumes that the unfunded liability is proportioned to payroll. This implicitly assumes that you have a similar proportion of active to retired members for all employers. We're going to look at that data next. But it also maintains any historical cross subsidies across employers. If it turns out over time that one employer's demographics were more expensive than another's, so you have this cross subsidy. If you allocate and depool in proportion to payroll, you will maintain those cross subsidies. In contrast, the liability method is more consistent with how the assets would be allocated today if the employers had never been pooled. That's really key. The payroll method basically assumes you've always been pooled and you're always going to stay pooled. But what if Confire and Eastfire had always been separate, always been separate? Well, that's exactly the result that you're going to end up with, or close to the result you're going to get, you'll end up with if you allocate on the liability method, because it assumes that your unfunded liability is proportional to the accrued liability, because it means everyone basically is funded the same percentage. This recognizes any accumulated historical differences in the proportion of actives to retireds, and it eliminates any historical cross subsidies between the two employers. So let me show you some. I'll go to slide 18 now. This has some of what we already saw. It's rounded. Okay. What we saw before was, I hope you can see my little cursor here. If you look at payroll, okay, Confire has 92% of the payroll and Eastfire has 8% of the payroll. But if you look at the liability, the total liability, Confire has 95% and Eastfire has 5%. Why is that? Well, look at the actives. For just the actives, it's not too far off. Confire has 89%, Eastfire has 11%, but look at the retired. For the retired liability, Confire has 98% of the retired liability and Eastfire has 2%. And under the current approach, if you depool in proportion to payroll, the fact that that Eastfire is actually paying the same proportionate share of the retired liability as Confire, even though Eastfire has only 2% and Confire has 98%. That allocation would be preserved if you allocate in proportion to payroll. Whereas if you allocate in proportion to liability, we're basically going to split the assets 95-5, and that means that Confire and the unfunded liability, we'll split the unfunded liability 95-5, and that means that Eastfire will get a relatively smaller share of that unfunded liability, and that's why their unfunded liability contribution rate goes down. Now, we added this bottom part here to give you a sense, you know, this is all dollars. Let's look at bodies. If you actually look at the headcount, okay, East Fire's proportion of the active members is 11%, and Confire's is 89%. It is not coincidental that that's the same as their proportion of the active liability, because the active liability is roughly in proportion to payroll. But look at the retirees again. For the liability, the Confire has 96% of the I misspoke. For the headcount, Confire has 96% of the retirees, 565, and East Fire has 4% of the retirees. So I'm sorry, I garbled that sentence. Let me say that again. We're focusing on the headcounts. East Fire has 4%, meaning 24. Confire has 96%. You might say, well, wait a second, though. I thought up here for the retirees, it was 98-2. What this means is not only does Confire have a much larger proportion of the retirees by count, but the retiree liabilities for Confire are greater, because even though they have 96% of the headcount, they have 98% of the liability. So not only does Confire have more retirees compared to East Fire, they have retirees with higher liability and higher benefits compared to East Fire. And that is really, this is the chart that shows the why behind why the two results are so different. If you allocate in proportion to liability, you're basically now leaving East Fire only responsible for its own retiree headcount and its own retiree liability. That's why they end up with a smaller share of the unfunded liability, and that's why the contribution rate would go down under the liability allocation method. We're almost done. We were asked, actually, so this is really where things end as far as talking about the cost impact on the employers. Now, we do want to look at the member cost impact. So that's, now I'm on slide 19. Okay. For the Pepperteers, the members pay one half of the normal cost. And by the way, the thing to remember is that all this stuff about reallocating the unfunded liability, that only affects the employers. The members only participate in the cost through the normal cost. Now, Andy, I'm going to ask you why the East Fire rate goes up as high as it does here, so you can start preparing that answer. For the Pepperteers, it's pretty straightforward. The members pay one half the normal cost. So after depooling, the normal cost rate, and so the member rates, would be based only on the separate member demographics of East Fire and Confire. Now, this is, I thought, was a little bit interesting. The member rates for Pepperteer D for East Fire would actually go down by about, on average, about 3%. Whereas the Confire would go up, the member rate on average, by 0.65. Now, we have the answer here. This is a little bit larger than that normal cost shift that we saw, which was for the employer was the 66 basis points. Mm-hmm. The thing is, the normal cost depends on your age and entry into the plan. The lower normal cost means, if you have lower entry ages, if people enter the plan younger, they tend to have a lower normal cost. Well, there's an interesting demographic difference between East Fire and Confire for the active members. And that is in Tier D. Now, this is the legacy tier, right? Andy, did I get that right?
No, Pepper. This is
Pepper. No, I'm sorry, the Pepper tier. This is for the Pepper tier. The average new hire into Pepper Tier D is age 25, whereas the average new hire into Pepper Tier D for Confire is 31. And that's the reason that we see this relatively large change. Now, we got to be a little bit careful. We have fewer than 10 East Fire members in Tier D. That's still a new and growing group. And so, like with all the normal costs, when you only have a few people in there, the normal cost can be based upon their demographics. So this rate may change over time as you get more new hires into Tier D. At least under depooling, the East Fire members would base their costs solely on their own demographics. Andy, anything else you can do to help clarify that?
I think this really goes back to one of the reasons why boards like CCCLA decides to pull in the first place is because you want to get more experience so that the data will be more reliable. Another reason why systems like CCCLA have been setting normal cost rate, in particular for the members using a bigger group as opposed to just 10 members, that we would have to do under the deep group.
Right. So as I say, we're talking about member contribution rates, and here we're really only, this slide is only talking about the PEPRA tiers. And that's why I say, because they're fairly new, when you depool, you're going to see Eastfire standing on its own, but just these 10 folks, fewer than 10. So we could see this normal cost rate change over time. Okay, the next slide, we're still on member contribution rates, but now we're looking at the legacy tiers. Now, what's interesting here is, for the basic rate for the legacy tiers, it's actually a formula that's in the statute. And so the basic rate, there is no change because each member is paying a rate based upon their entry age, based on a formula that's in the statute, and that statute hasn't changed. So there's really no change there for the basic rate. It turns out that the COLA rates are split between, for the legacy tiers, this gets complicated. For the legacy tiers, the COLA rates are split between the employer and the members. So they do change with the valuation. And so if we depool, again, just like the normal cost rates change, we are going to see some decrease in the average COLA member rate by about 18 basis points, and the CONFIRE would go up by what is amounts to just the other direction, but spread over a large number of members. So again, I don't want to dismiss these as being not real numbers, but they're much, much smaller impacts than we saw certainly on the unfunded, and it's even a smaller impact than we saw as far as Eastfire is concerned for the member rates under the new PEPRA tier. Okay, the last thing we were asked to do was to see if there's anything about the action being requested today that is it would be inconsistent with Contra Costa's stated and printed actuarial funding policy. The short answer is no, there's not. The funding policy, it has, in addition to the usual amortization stuff and asset smoothing, it has a nice catalog of all the board's other policies. And it describes what was done back in 2009. And it mentions that you depooled using the payroll method. And it also mentions that that you have this 50 person threshold. However, the policy does not specify the method to use. For 2009, the payroll method was used in order to minimize the changes in unfunded liability rates due to depool. I think the board intent was to take the depooling action on sort of a looking forward basis, but not have it affect the rates on the day the action took place. So that is why the board used the payroll method when doing the 2009 depooling, which again was actually done back as of 2002, what if, and then rolled forward. However, Eastfire's request to depool based on the AAL, based on the liability, does not deviate from any provisions in the funding policy. Now, the policy does currently state that Eastfire is pooled with CONFIRE. That is in there. So we would need a conforming amendment simply to state the fact that Eastfire is no longer pooled. But the fact that that the payroll method was used in 2009, that is not something that is specifically required for or specified in your funding policy. But we did go back and look, and it does say that Eastfire is pooled with CONFIRE. So again, I'm calling this a conforming amendment. But there's no inconsistency between doing this. It is different than what was done in 2009, but I think we have a different fact pattern here. 2009, we were basically making a change for all the employers, all the larger employers, and because this was something being decided by the board, not at the request of any of the employers, it was done in a way to minimize the short-term impact on the employer rates. Whereas now the board is faced with a new question, which is number one, do you or do you not grant Eastfire's request to depool, and if so, you grant their request to do so on a basis that reflects their proportion of the plans of the liabilities in cost group 8. And that concludes our slides. I'm happy to keep these. I always know sort of which is, I'm going to keep this one up on the screen here just as we have our discussion. Or, Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it to you whether you want to keep the slides up or go to screen view or gallery view or whatever you think would be useful for the discussion.
I think the current view is fine.
Thank you.
I had a question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Paul, I'm trying to simplify this fascinating subject. And so I'm going to ask if my characterization is doing it rough justice. Is it fair to say that if you were going to depool and use the payroll method, that the payroll method in the depooling reflects the actions taken in 2009 and makes the depooling decision effective either as of today's date or in 2022 or whatever the date turns out to be, versus the liability method, which would in effect go in the time machine and treat the parties as if the 2009 cost group 8 pooling had never occurred. Is that fair?
No, I think except for one feature, except for the pension obligation bond. Because one of the things that that was in the original Confire request was we have been basically maintaining this pension obligation bond credit for Confire and giving right. it interest at the assumed interest rate. Whereas in fact, during that period of time, actual returns averaged less than that. So in fact, if you actually went back in the time machine and depooled back in 2009, then Confire would have actually would have ended up with a smaller POB credit and therefore a larger unfunded liability. So if it weren't for the pension obligation bond, I think your statement is roughly correct. And I'm going to ask you to check me on that. Because of the pension obligation bond, to some extent, the request being made by East Fire is not to really go back and look at what things would have looked like, but instead to make the decision today that was not made then. So I don't think it's quite the same as if we had depooled back there because of the pension obligation bond. Andy, is that right?
Yeah, and I would agree. I would agree.
Thank you. That's helpful, Paul. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, if I might, one of the things that was the primary driver in depooling way back when was the county. And this seemed fairly logical, and then the numbers supported it easily. The county was subsidizing so many of the other groups. And we wanted, as a board, not to speak for the entire board, but certainly one of the things I wanted to see was that these groups were standing more on their own. So this idea somehow that the county was subsidizing smaller groups seems to be turned on its head in this case. Could you just briefly touch again on what appears to be one of the statements in there that suggested that the smaller district is actually subsidizing Confire? Because it seems counterintuitive.
Well, again, it has to do with the fact that over time there have been more retirees, proportionately more retirees compared to actives in the larger group. Maybe because they've been around longer. We don't have a why behind that. But it's really the subsidy we think is primarily here in the demographics on this slide. Because, you know, if you end up, you know, suppose you have, you know, you start a whole new plan and all you have is actives, but it turns out that one of the active groups, you know, is older than another active group, but you got them all pooled together. And over time, the one employer just has a lot more retirees. Well, that means that their liability compared to their payroll is going to get bigger. Whereas if the other employer doesn't have any retirees, their liability to payroll is going to remain relatively small. So it's really the place where the subsidy comes in is primarily in the fact that, that Confire is a more mature employer with more, we talk about the support ratios and the evaluation report. We take the retirees divided by the actives. You maybe heard that ratio. That's exactly what we're looking at here. And so basically Confire is a more mature employer because they have a higher proportion of retirees to actives. That's where the subsidy is occurring.
Paul, it's John. It, it, East Fire would not be doing this if they didn't see it as significantly to their economic benefit. Is there any other grouping that we presently have as a part of the plan where there are similar patterns? And this would set a clear precedent to say, if the subsidy goes in my favor, don't do anything. If the subsidy goes to my detriment, I want to depool.
Yeah, Andy, I think we looked into that. I'll ask you to respond to that in a moment. I do think, though, that East Fire is in a unique situation. One is because with their size, they are, you know, right at the point where they could stand on their own. So I don't know if we have, Andy, we'll have to look and see if we have any other employers that would be able to sort of take on their own experience. It sort of makes them a candidate for depooling, John. But Andy, I think we looked around to see if there were any other similar situations. The other thing to note here is that you've got only two employers in this cost group, whereas the other cost group have multiple employers. They tend to have like the giant county and a lot of little ones. So Andy, can you comment on what we see in the other cost groups, if there are any other candidates for this type of request?
Yeah, actually, unfortunately, Paul, we haven't done that. I think what you and I have done is to take a look at the number of active employees. So we definitely, as part of our duty to report back to the association and to the board on the declining employer payroll policy, we'll look at the headcount to make sure that none of the employers have suffered a reduction in headcount compared to other employers in those rate groups. However, in order to answer this question, we would actually also have to look at the proportion of the liabilities. Now, under the payroll method, payroll approach to allocate the UAL, unfortunately, there's really never an actuarial reason why we have to do so. So we do have the payroll, we do have the active headcount under our belt, very easy to resurrect and come up with, but we never have the need, and therefore we have not looked at the liability for each of the employers.
Andy, I don't have the actual report open in front of me. Do you have that nearby? Can you look and just remind me, again, for Mr. Phillips' questions, where are the other major poolings still taking place? I think of the cost group, the county general cost group, which has, the county clearly dominates. Yeah. Can you give me an idea of where we have other employers, and is there any place where we have anything even close to these are not the same size employers, but it's not, 10,000 compared to 10. Do we have any other place where we have, I'm thinking of courts maybe, any place where they're relatively in the same order of magnitude?
I would say, Paul, you're right, that cost group one and two are the places where we do have some of these smaller employers. However, in cost group one, it's really split between the county and the court. And I think we know that the county and the court have to set the rate the same way, right? So for that reason, we kind of have to put them together. So it's really down to really just maybe rate group one, where we do have, besides the county and the court, some of the possibly smaller employers that can have a different proportion of payroll versus to relative to liabilities.
Right. So just say, John, the one, just again to Mr. Phillips through the chair, I think that the one that would probably be the most natural candidate just because of size would be the courts. But of course, there's actually a statute that says that they have to pool their normal costs and their unfunded liabilities unless there's a pension obligation bond. And then I think you really get to the much smaller employers that are in rate group one with the county.
So it sounds like there really isn't a real precedent concern here.
We don't believe so, although, precedent is a legal term. I don't know, though, that I don't think you have this same fact pattern with any other employers. And so if you had another request, I think it would be dealt with on its own merits.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Paul, when back in 2009 and that the number 50 employees was kind of the benchmark, do you recall why 50 was selected? For lack of a better term, a magical number?
I knew you were going to say magic, because of course it's magic. It's actually our call magic, right?
Yeah,
one little data point is, and Andy, you can check me on this too, I believe at CalPERS, I think their threshold is 25. I think. I know it's less than 50. No, but at CalPERS, you know, if you have 25 or more employees, you are your own cost group. And I'd have to double check that number, but I do remember it was less than 50. So I think the idea was we wanted to be a little more conservative than CalPERS. But there's no formula. I think it's, again, this is actuarial intuition. I think with 100 actives, you can definitely stand on your own. I think with 10 actives, you can't. Where do you draw the line between them?
Great, so I
think it was subjective, but with a little bit of a hint that CalPERS is even more aggressive in terms of depool.
Hey, Paul.
Any other?
Paul, yeah. I had a comment. You know, the cross subsidies really get to the essence of pooling, and so I think that it would be good if you were to comment on. You know, because there's some discussion also in East Confires or East Contra Costa Fires District's request on that if they, you know, if this request was granted, that they wouldn't look at possibly repooling for at least 5 years, if ever they would make that request. But I think it's important to also talk about what activities that could occur in that district to cause some big swings in these in contribution rates in the future, because obviously that's a concern. So if you could touch on that a little bit more with the board, it would be appreciated.
Sure, and Andy, you can follow me up here. You know, I'm noticing, for example, that right now on this slide, you know, East Fire, their actives is 34, which is less than 50, even though their total population, you know, membership is 87. So you know, it's the same thing we said in our more extreme example. But again, and remember, this is not investments, because all the investment experience is pooled because everybody basically earns the same rate of return. Okay. So we don't, it's not an investment issue. But if, you know, if East Fire 1 year has, you know, I don't know what the normal number of disabilities would be for 34, Andy, but would four be a lot? I think it probably would be. That's 10%. Mm-hmm. If they had 10 disabilities, and the disabilities, you know, was a higher benefit than we were expecting to pay at retirement in the valuation, you know, that could cause them to see a cost increase. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the other possibility is, this was through a request that they have made to the board back in December of 2019. They also asked what happened if, for example, we have an assumption that salary that we use to amortize the unfunded liability will grow at the annual rate of 3.25%. So I think in their request back to the board in 2019, they also asked, I don't know if it is hypothetical or not, but they did ask, what if the district's payroll were not to grow at 3.25%? So it's possible that if that were to be a real question because of the budgetary constraint, that they did not have the ability to grow the payroll for the foreseeable future at 3.25%. Then the UAL rate will increase, and that might be that could be a possible reason for them to come back to ask the board for them to be repooled with a bigger county confire at that point in time. But that is simply reading into the request that they made no guarantee that they have provided to us what their payroll projection is going to be for the foreseeable future.
So let me build on that. I use disability as the example. But payroll is another good example. Now, the thing is, if as long as their headcount remains relatively stable, the 34, you know, if they, just like a lot of employers after 2008-9 did not see payroll growth, okay? So if payroll does not grow, not because of people leaving, but because people are not getting raises, well, that does two things. That gives you a liability gain because now you're going to pay a smaller benefit. And then it also, though, gives you a smaller than expected payroll to spread your costs over. So they could see some cost instability due to payroll. But if the reason that their payroll doesn't grow is because they're losing headcount, well, that's when the declining employer policy might kick in. And in that case, now this would mean that if East Fire was in effect, you know, going out of business, if they really saw a material, the phrase is material and sustained decrease
in their active participant and their payroll, then actually the board could impose depool, because that's what the that's really what the declining employer policy actually does. It imposes depooling, and it does it on a liability basis. So I'm talking around it a little bit, Gail. We're trying to see, Ace Fire, in their February 14, 2020 letter, they do say that they agree they will not seek to repool for 5 years, and they do not anticipate making such a request in any event. But I think, though, as with any relatively small employer, we would want to keep an eye on them, if only because of the declining employer policy. So, Gail, I think I'm talking around your question. Is there anything I should fill in?
No, I don't think so. I just think it was important to mention some of the activities that might cause some great fluctuation in their rates in the future, just so the board had an understanding of that.
Paul, can I chime in here?
Sure.
I don't think there's much chance of East County Fire decreasing at all. They are basically on life support right now. They have three stations that cover 249 miles, and they're only getting about $94 out of their tax base per resident, where Con Fire is getting $149 per resident. Many of the other fire districts in Contra Costa are getting way, way more than that. So if they went down any farther than they are, they would just not be a non-existent.
Well, I guess that's I don't know if that's comforting or not, only because if that were to happen, then we'd be in a declining employer situation.
Well, and why I bring this forward is that East County is doing it because it's not because they want more money to spend for frivolities. They need the money to survive, and this is something that they very well have to have. If they don't have it, then we may very well be in real trouble.
So, Mike, yes. Looking at the memo from Gail, if you look at the numbers in 2016, they had 42 active members, and 2020 they have 38. So that's a 10% decline, and they've gone up and down. But you see that number as a stable number. You don't see it as a projection that it'll decline further.
They can't possibly decline any further. They have three stations that cover Brentwood, Oakley, Discovery Bay, Byron. You can't have any less than that and cover that area. So, you know, the only thing that we can try to do is build them up and not let them go down any farther.
Paul, can I ask you another question? Thanks, Mike. With respect to fairness, I very much appreciate your presentation and discussion on this, and it's a lot clearer to me now. So, but with respect to fairness between putting this into place as of 2019 versus 2022, I understand that East Bay wants to, or East County wants to, kind of realize savings as soon as possible to help their budget. But do you have any comment on that, which would be fair overall?
I do think that the things that happened in 2022 when those layers drop off, if anything, if you depool now, they will then get a slightly smaller share of the savings, and I think that is fair. So what they're saying is we only want our slice of the unfunded liability, and that means when one of the slices gets fully paid off, it would not be as large as it would have been. So I don't see that there's any reason to delay the depooling in order to sort of synchronize it with those layers dropping off in 2022. I think it's a small effect, and if anything, that would argue for depooling now. That way you get a better, more fair split when those layers drop off. If I think, was that what the question, sir, is you saw that something's happening in 2022. What if we wait till then? Is that the idea?
Right. So Confire is pushing to delay that till 2022. I'm not quite sure if there's a strong argument behind that. But if it makes more sense to depool now on an actuarial basis or a fairness basis, then yeah, I appreciate that.
Again, that's somewhat subjective, but I think I will say yes, that sooner, if you're inclined to do this, then sooner is better.
Dr. McDonald, just the letter that's provided by the board in the packet clearly states from Confire that they're not proposing. They're saying if it is actually, they would have an alternate enactment date, but they are in the very first paragraph, second sentence, they actually say that they oppose this action altogether. Just to clarify.
Paul, I have a question. Since you're our actuary, if we took names off of this and you just looked into this situation, what methodology would in your estimation be most if you're trying to be equitable and that's your driving force, what is most equitable looking at this situation? Liability method or the payroll method?
I have to be a little bit careful here because, you know, actuarially speaking, these are both valid methods. So I don't want to bias in that
Understood.
Way. But
Understood.
Because you know, because I'm someone who lives and measures liabilities, I use this idea of a divorce. You know, if you're going to separate these two employers, okay, so then they're going to live on their own. It seems to me to be actuarially more equitable to have each employer just pay for their own people. And that's what the liability method does.
Great. Thank you. Any other?
Yes,
go ahead.
My recollection is no better than Paul's, and I'm sorry to have to say that, as to how the 50 was selected. I was there at the time, and I would be willing to bet that it was very much along the lines of what Paul was suggesting. But some of the concerns I have are about policy changes that appear at one time to be just one group. And I get concerned about precedents that are going to be established. What happens when the next group comes up and says, you know, we were close to that 50, but now we're down to 42 and we want to be out too. It reminds me a little bit of some of the stuff we saw in insurance experience where we used to pool groups for insurance experience. And then we would get a group that would get the bright idea that they wanted to be experience rated on their own experience until they found out the following year that their rates went up.
There you go.
So, you know, and that happens very, very commonly in the insurance business. And I realize it's not a perfect parallel, but it's a similar parallel. And I'm just not, I don't buy this idea that, you know, we have no plans to do this, and try and reverse it, but, we'll tell you for 5 years, we promise not to until they promise that they can't keep that promise anymore. That kind of a promise I find not particularly compelling. But I'm more interested in the precedent that we're establishing and the idea that the next group and the next group and the next group are going to come in, and pretty soon we've changed our pooling policy and it's down to much lower groups. So I just expressed some of those concerns about changing the policy on the fly.
Mr. Holcomb, the one that I do remember from back 2009, I'm pretty clear there was no one else at that cusp. I mean, the other employers were either clearly bigger or clearly smaller. I do remember Confire being the only one where we had to struggle with which side of the 50 break to go. So,
okay. Could very well be right. I don't have that whole list in front of me, and yeah. Some of the other groups may have been considerably smaller. I mean, I'm sure they were. I just can't remember what the numbers were.
And in full disclosure, you all probably know I'm chair of the Confire board, and I'm not being overly vocal, but I would love to hear from both East County and Confire, if we're through the presentation, just to sort of get their perspectives out there as well. I think it would be helpful. to have that. I think, and going to why the delay for 2 years per the letter, it's just that's when the pension obligation bond is paid, and then we have greater flexibility in funding, which is why if we were to take a minor hit, we'd just soon have that.
Sorry, Candace, your last part cut out.
Oh, I just said that's why we'd like to have that additional lag time in funding.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other trustee questions specifically related to information Paul provided in his presentation?
Todd, I've got a couple things. To Jerry's point, I have to agree. I'm a little bit hesitant that there was a comment made that we won't request repooling. I'm scared of the precedent that we're essentially creating here, where somebody can basically request based off what may be working better for them at that time. That's kind of what I'm a little concerned about, that comment. Also, I want to be careful in terms of what we say in terms of supporting East Contra Costa and building them up when, in fact, you know, this is a detriment to Confire as well. I do have a couple other questions. Paul, did we ever discuss back in 2009, did the board ever discuss the liability method as an option, or was it just the intent to go off payroll just to try to maintain the rate?
I think it was the latter. I think that the practice at the time was, you know, this presumption of stability and permanence and things staying in proportion. So I do not believe that there was discussion of the liability method at the time. Liability method has gotten considerable attention in public practice in California in recent years, in particular because of the declining employer situation. So I think we're a little more alert to the fact that things do change over time, whereas the thing about the payroll method, it really is a presumption of stability and no changes in proportions going forward. That's how we worked back in 2009. I do not believe the liability method was considered.
Okay.
Or, I'm going to say that better. It was, we were aware of it, but the policy focus was we don't want the employers to, we don't want to have this action change the rates today. It was kind of a big selling point. No immediate impact on the contribution rates. So that's why the liability method didn't get much attention.
Mm-hmm. And then the liability method here would change the rates for both employers, one in the positive for them and one in the negative. So we have to keep that in light as well, that we have two dissenting opinions here. I'm with Candace. I don't have any other questions, Todd. I'm with Candace. I'd like to hear from both employers.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question for the board?
Please.
Oh, thank you. This is a talking question, so forgive me. I think there are two issues. One is about whether to depool. That's an administrative issue and also a risk analysis of the plan sponsor. But putting the depooling aside, I wanted to ask Paul about this. The conversation about switching horses in the way that we calculate the contribution rate seems to me very similar, Paul, to the conversation that we've had in the past about the COLA. And what to use. You know, some systems calculate COLA based on the average of the previous 12 months compared to the latest 12 months, and some use December compared to December. But I always thought that from your perspective as the actuaries that you encouraged consistency in that and not changing simply because a December to December 1 year may turn out to generate a higher COLA than an average annual versus the subsequent average annual method. And that from an actuarial standpoint, the key was consistency of methods over a long period of time. Isn't that the same situation here? We have an opportunistic request because right now at this snapshot in time, it looks better economically for one of the plan sponsors. That may not be the same. Isn't that the, kind of the same thing that we talk about with the change in the method of COLA to meet circumstances year in and year out, and consistency is important for the board? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Harvey, it's an interesting question. I'm going to say, actually, I know, I think they're really quite different, but it's a very productive question. Here's why. The Kohler question is, you have an index, and you simply want the index to be consistent. But here, and this is why I'm glad we have this slide up here, the demographic difference between these two employers, that is an accumulation of time, and that is not going to reverse itself. So the idea that East Fire is asking this because at this moment in time, it is financially beneficial to them. I am hard pressed to see how East Fire is ever going to suddenly become more mature than Confire. So I think this is actually a much slower, historically grown event. And so I think the contrast is helpful, Harvey, but this is not a matter of, well, this year one looks better, the next year the other one looks better. These are demographically different employers. And even though East Fire may need the money, and that's why they're asking now, this slide right here is not going to suddenly change the way, Harvey, for example, a snapshot index and an average index might change. So I appreciate the question, Bob, but I actually say no, they are significantly and importantly different.
I think if I may, Paul, to answer the question, which I, of course, agree with your answer, to cover all the bases, I think the only possibility that the, for lack of a better word, inequity would be minimized would be if the county Confire went out and hire a lot of active employees in the foreseeable future and bring the proportional payroll up from the current 91-92% closer to the liability ratio, which is about 95%. So it can happen, but maybe not very likely under the current budgetary constraints.
And you would go in the other way. If half of the East Fire people retire tomorrow, that would also shift it the other way. So I think you're right. But my real point is that this is a situation that has emerged demographically over time. Thanks, Harvey. I appreciate that question.
Any final questions? Of course, Paul and Andy will be here after we hear from the chiefs and available for our discussion. But anything specific at this time? Okay, seeing none, what we're going to do now is we're going to invite the chiefs of both East Fire and Confire to speak, and then we'll open it up to public comment. And then the board will go into consideration. So from East Contra Costa Fire, Chief Helmick, are you on the line?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much, sir. You have the floor.
Thank you very much to Mr. Phillip, the chair, and also to Cicera staff. A little bit of housekeeping is I do want to hit on a couple points of the presentation. That and again, forgive me, I don't know who asked the question, but it was in regard to slide 8. It asked if the East Contra Costa Fire Protection Board weighed into this decision. And as a point of clarity, back in 2002 when the district was formed, we were overseen by the Contra Costa County Board of Supervisors all the way until 2010. From 2010 to 2019, we had a 9-member appointed board. 4 of those members were appointed by the City of Brentwood, 3 by the City of Oakley, and 2 by the Contra Costa County Board of Supervisors. And we were in that appointed state until 2019, where we had our first elected board. So if anyone weighed into that decision, it would have been the Contra Costa County Board of Supervisors. So that's just a point of reference. Secondarily, I also want to note that the district has thoroughly looked at the risk and or fluctuation that we discussed about the impacts on the district if we were to depool, everything related to payroll, potential disability, and our headcount. So I do want to make it clear that we do and we have thought through the potential consequences of what we're requesting. And I also want to note that the comments I'm going to share with you here in a moment, we have sent an email to the public comment link onto the agenda, and we also copied Gail onto that email. And some of the talking points I'm going to be sharing with you now will be on the record and will be available for you to reference back to if needed. So again, my name is Brian Helmick, Fire Chief, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to present the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District's response to CICERA's actuarial consultant August 20 report on our district's request to depool from cost group number 8. As I presented to you on July 24, 2019, our district requests to be depooled from the CONFIRE based upon the accrued liability method, effective of December 31st, 2019 evaluation. Our district should only be responsible for contribution rates based upon assets and member demographics. We propose to be depooled prospectively and avoid attempting to reconcile the historical financial inequities from this board's 2009 initial decision, which was retroactive back to 2002. Further, in return of a favorable decision today, our district is willing to waive any challenge to the detrimental financial impacts caused by CONFIRE's pension obligation bond. We really believe that our request is reasonable. Our requested actuarial accrued liability method is a fair option for both parties and will accurately reflect each agency's own pension costs. In 2017, our appointed board and now elected board governed and grew concerned about the previous and unjustified unfunded actuarial accrued liabilities. Our directors, like this board, must exercise their fiduciary responsibilities. Our board initiated an evaluation of cost group number 8 and concluded that the financial burden imposed on our district is inequitable with CONFIRE, and this burden has and will continue to be detrimental and will detrimentally affect our service delivery, our firefighters, our employees, and our strategic planning. The estimated 38% decrease in unfunded liability, as identified on the previous presentation by Siegel on slide 4, that would flow from depooling, helps us rectify these impacts. CICERA's actuary report supports the district's request. Quite simply, our request is depool based on actual liabilities. And this is necessary due to the historical differences in demographics, active versus retired, between CONFIRE and the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District. Our request to be depooled through the liability method best reflects our district's and CONFIRE's true pension status. On the other hand, the payroll method fails to reflect the significant demographic differences between our two agencies and creates a significant financial inequities. In fact, Siegel concedes in slide 17 that the liability method is more consistent with how assets would be allocated if employers had never been pooled. Furthermore, on slide 16, Siegel concedes that the liability method recognizes different proportions of payroll versus liabilities from different employers and is appropriate for permanent change in proportion of payroll among employers. On slide 17, Siegel also recognizes the liability method eliminates any historical cross subsidies among employers. The Siegel chart on page 13 confirms the significant financial detriment the current pooling and active payroll allocations imposes on our district. It should be noted, however, that the Siegel report does not show the asset split under the payroll and liability methods, and those differences are significant. If you were to look at the allocation method and the estimated district valuation value of assets on December 31st of 2018, you would find that payroll would come to the tune of $31.8 million and liability would be $38.9 million, with a difference of $7.1 million. To put these numbers in perspective, the $7.1 million difference represents over two times the district's $3.3 million pension pay shown on slide 18 of Siegel's presentation. While the district recognizes there is no asset allocation method that is perfect, this wide range is unacceptable to our district's ratepayers, firefighters, and employees. As we have explained, the liability method is more equitable. There is also no CSERA policy preventing depooling by the accrual or liability method. And CSERA, in many ways, already uses this method. Significantly, Siegel further notes CSERA's funding policy does not specify the method used to allocate assets when depooling. Siegel also observes on slide 21, quote, East Fire's request to depool based on the AAL method does not deviate from any provisions of the funding policy. It should also be noted that the Siegel report at slide 12 acknowledges the liability method is used for CSERA in its declining employer payroll policies for employers with substantive and permanent decline in payrolls. This is necessary to accurately allocate the cost between agencies. This is the situation we have here. The allocation by active payroll does not accurately allocate pension costs. Siegel's report acknowledges also the problems with the payroll method. There are deficiencies in the payroll method as shown, and as Siegel described on slide 17, where it assumes that the unfunded actuarial accrued liability is proportional to active payroll. Yet slide 18 clearly shows that the liability method is not proportional to active payroll. So the unfunded actuarial accrued liability would also not be proportional to payroll. Siegel also assumes a similar proportion of active to retired members for all employers, where slide 18 shows there is not a similar proportion of active to retired members between the district and Con Fire. In fact, Siegel shows the retiree to active ratio is 71% for the district and 200% for Con Fire. Finally, at slide 17, Siegel admits that the payroll method maintains any historical cross subsidies across employers. These inequitable historical cross subsidies are precisely the problem that we're facing here today. And in response to Confire's opposition by a letter dated April 10th, 2020, where Confire opposes our district's depooling request, and if granted, they ask for a delay until December of 2022. Confire's position is understandable. For some 11 years, Confire has enjoyed the rich financial benefits as a far larger demographic member of cost group number 8, and it has reaped the benefit from its pension obligation bonds. In simple words, East Contra Costa Fire has historically cross-subsidized Confire. Any further delay simply compounds the inequities imposed on the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District. In closing, we strongly believe that the CSERA has a fiduciary duty to rectify these historical inequities that have been imposed upon our agency, our firefighters, employees, and ratepayers. Any delay in the board's decision will simply cause further financial hardship on our district. Moreover, if you vote to allow depooling, but restricted to the payroll method, the historical cross subsidies of Confire's pension costs by East Contra Costa Fire will go uncorrected with significant negative impacts on our critical services and our future strategic planning. Therefore, we ask that you decide today to allow depooling based upon the liability method. Again, these are emailed to you, and the comments will be there for reference. And if you have any more questions, I'm available, but I want to thank you for the time to present and speak on behalf of the district. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Did anyone have anything specific at this time, or else I'll bring in Confire Chief? Okay, seeing none. One second here. Chief Burchard, are you on the line?
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. You have the floor, sir.
Okay. Good afternoon, members of the Retirement Board and CSERA staff, Lewis Brochard, Fire Chief, Contra Costa County Fire. basically want to talk a little bit about Confire's position and some of the history with East Contra Costa Fire. You know, the district acknowledges the board's decision and the subsequent action to depool Cicera's assets, liabilities, and costs by employer starting with the 2009 valuation. We think this was primarily done to limit the subsidizing of rates across employers with differing benefits, perhaps particularly across safety member and general member employers. That said, the advantages of having pooled assets, liabilities, and costs was likely to decrease risk to individual member agencies and increase plan efficiencies and stabilization with regard to the overall plan experience and rates. Even after taking the action to depool by employer, some cost-sharing arrangements still existed. For example, employers having fewer than 50 active members were pooled with a larger employer offering the same benefit plan, and some of that was discussed earlier by Siegel this morning. The prime example is the safety members of Confire and East Contra Costa Fire being pooled together in what is now known Cost Group 8. Depooling Cost Group 8 would be contrary to what we understand Cicera's current policies to be based on employer size, and in this case, the request to depool a very small employer from a much larger employer for the purpose of reducing the smaller employer's retirement contributions in the near term does not seem consistent with the goals of managing and controlling future contribution volatility and ensuring the systemic funding of future benefit payments. Additionally, there's no assurance that such an action would have enough of an impact on East Contra Costa Fire to ensure future stability and continuity of services. Because we, Confire, issued pension obligation bonds, we'll call them POBs, in 2005, and East Contra Costa Fire did not, after plan rates are determined through an actuarial valuation, Confire receives a POB credit. Because Confire makes its final debt service payment on the POBs in 2022, that portion, that POB credit, will drop off and Confire's employer contribution rates will increase. While Confire and East Contra Costa Fire are separate public agencies, you probably all know this, but it's important to note that we share a border and work with each other during emergency incidents on a daily basis. Confire provides automatic and mutual aid assistance to our neighbor at a rate of twice what is received from East Contra Costa Fire. This is truly a system of emergency services and response that is dependent on Confire providing assistance every day. East Contra Costa Fire is financially unable to provide a robust service level to the large geographical area it serves, and that was brought up by at least one of the members today. It's simply underfunded. That's not through any fault of Chief Pelmick or the current management team or their governing body. Over many years, their governing board has put multiple special tax measures on the ballot without success. We acknowledge all of these issues, but it is these very issues, the fact that they're unable to be solved over a number of years, that make the future structure, sustainability, and strength of fire service in East Contra Costa fairly uncertain. Currently, Confire must respond into East Contra Costa Fire's area to have full response capability on any one alarm or significant fire. Thus, the border between the two agencies, and in fact, the two agencies being separate and distinct, and the associated financial burden to the taxpayers is at best very murky. If we are all aligned to support the continued operation of mutually beneficial services to the public, the depooling of Cost Group 8 just doesn't really make sense. It will, in our estimate, cost our agency, Confire, an additional $1.6 million annually. We did our calculations based on actual payroll costs as well as factoring in raises. So it was said earlier it was a $1.3 million cost. Our numbers suggest it is $1.6 million annually, which will grow over time. What would that $1.6 million annual increase in cost to Confire? It's basically an additional cost to the overall system of providing emergency response. What would that provide in regards to enhancement of services, reduced reliability on Confire, and the real likelihood of reducing volatility to the ongoing pension costs of East Contra Costa Fire, which would then obviously be on their own as a much smaller payroll. We doubt that the increased cost of $1.6 million to us, the net provider of aid to East Contra Costa Fire, would provide any tangible benefit to the services provided on a daily basis. It would improve the balance sheet of East Contra Costa Fire, but we would be interested to know what specific increases in capacity would be achieved through those savings, such that East Contra or Confire would not just be having an increased cost, but yet providing the same level of services. Additionally, the pension obligation bond credit will be eliminated soon as our pension obligation bonds are paid off. The future uncertainty of our economy, given the COVID crisis, and the volatility on a small employer group should also be taken into consideration, and that has been discussed this morning. Any future volatility or increased cost to East Contra Costa Fire could have a detrimental effect on their ability to increase or maintain service levels, which would ultimately lead back to more assistance from Confire. The Contra Costa County Fire Protection District urges CICERA to maintain the current pooling of cost group aid consistent with the current policies of our retirement association. I've heard some interesting terms used today, divorce, and it's an appropriate term. However, this is such an ironic situation because Contra Costa Fire and East Contra Costa Fire operationally can't divorce. So there's an irony there that it might be able to be done within CICERA for actuarial reasons or balance sheet reasons. But to provide what we're here to provide, which is emergency services, the two agencies are inexorably linked because of the current funding and staffing issue within East Contra Costa Fire. As far as standing on their own, we want East Contra Costa Fire to be successful. We want them to be sustainable. We want them to have increased levels of service because ultimately that is what's best for their communities, but also it helps Confire because it would lead to less reliance on Confire. However, until certain things happen in the future, I believe East Contra Costa Fire is working on a tax initiative into the near future. The ability for East Contra Costa Fire to stand on their own is still operationally, at least, an issue. As far as funding, appropriately funded or underfunded fire districts, I would remind CICERA that Contra Costa Fire, while larger, is still an underfunded fire district. We still have two fire stations that are closed that have yet to be reopened as a result of the Great Recession. So it may be an issue of scale and size, but as far as appropriately funded or not, Confire is still not necessarily appropriately funded. And as the fire chief, every dollar is important to continue providing services, continue to try and stretch the rubber band to open, reopen, or augment existing services, not just for the benefit of Contra Costa Fire, but also, ironically, to the benefit of East Contra Costa Fire. So certainly happy to answer any questions that you may have. Appreciate the time and the ability to speak with you this morning or this afternoon at this point. I'll close with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions for the Chief before we open it to the public? Okay, seeing none. I don't know if this should go to Gail or Christina. Do we have any written public comment?
And if I could just note, as you go to public comment, I apologize to my CICERA board members. I also chair LAFCO, as you know from our live meetings, and my LAFCO meeting starts in 7 minutes. So in about 3 minutes, I will be departing. I would love to be part of this discussion. And if there are unanswered questions that cause us to continue this over for 2 weeks, that would be perfect for me because I'd love to be part of the broader discussion. And I apologize how my schedule sometimes, when we have a long CICERA meeting, puts us in this predicament. So thank you.
Thank you, Candace. So back to, I'm sorry, you said there was no public comment, correct?
There is no other public comment.
Okay. And are we taking public comment from the phone, Gail? Or is
No, they would need to submit it to the public comment email box that we set up. And the only item that was received was we recently received Chief Helmick's statement that he read to the board.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Just wanted to be sure. So we'll open it, the item up to the board for discussion. Go ahead, Scott.
Just a quick comment, and then I think I'd like to make a motion. We've digested a lot of material today. We've had an unusually long meeting, at least for meetings in recent months. And I really appreciated the Siegel presentation and both of the involved parties' take on it. I was struck by how fine-pointed these issues are. I don't know that I'm prepared to take it on today. I'd like to digest this and suggest we put it on our agenda in 2 weeks to deliberate and reach a decision if we can. But I don't feel comfortable doing that today, and I certainly don't feel comfortable without our full board complement as well. And since Member Anderson has to run off because of her LAPCO issue, I would prefer we put it off. So I'm going to make that motion.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor.
I'll second that.
I'm sorry, who was that? Oh, Rusty. Okay, there's a motion and second to table this for 2 weeks so that the board can... Okay, so that the board can mull over the information that's been provided to us and have a full complement of trustees. Any discussion?
I'm prepared to support the motion, but as long as we have Chief Helmick on the line, I just want to make an observation. I've been watching from a distance in different capacities and the challenges you've had in your fire district. And one of the things that is particularly discouraging to me is to watch the insufficient support you have from the residents and of your particular service area. I just do not understand why there is this lack of an interest or concern or commitment on their part to supporting the fire district out there. I've never understood that, and I wish you luck with any future tax issues. But one of the concerns I have, and I'll continue to have that, I guess, is that while this proposal may in fact have a certain amount of logic to it, it seems like it's a one-off for trying to help balance the deficit or potential deficit of the district. And I'm just not sure how many times you can spend those things and try and make up for the lack of support you're getting from the citizenry. And that I still support the motion, and I'm prepared to vote in favor of it.
Thank you, Jerry. Any other discussion?
Todd, let me just ask Gail, is there any time constraint in going in 2 weeks? I wouldn't want to put off a decision more than 2 weeks or more than.
No, we can arrange some things to be able to bring it back in 2 weeks, I think.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Todd, this is Rusty.
Hi, Rusty.
It'd be helpful to talk maybe a little bit more about the whole philosophy behind pooling. Usually, I understood pooling to help the little guy, not the big guy, so the little guy doesn't go under, because the big guy usually normally has more resources. And it just seems, from what I understand through the presentation today, it's kind of gone just the opposite. The little guy is helping the big guy, so the big guy doesn't go under. And I don't think we're setting a precedence here in this case if we talked about depooling when the little guy is the one who's getting penalized. I throw that out there for thought. Maybe again, when we talk about this in 2 weeks, we'll talk a little bit more about the philosophy behind this feedback coming through. But again, Paul mentioned earlier in the presentation that when things are balanced between the different employers, and the whole idea of pooling seems fair. But when things get unbalanced, where it's to the detriment of one, then it calls into question whether the pooling idea is really working. And I'm here in East Fire saying it's not. they're the ones being penalized by the big guy in the pool, Linen, and it's turned out to be unfair to them. And I'm from East County, of course, so I have to disclose that now. I'm not voting today, of course, or suggesting we vote for East Fire because I live there. But I do have some sympathy towards the little guy who's struggling to stay in business, to stay in service, I should say, with little resources coming from the city of Brentwood or from the citizenry. But anyway, throw that out for you guys to think about.
And I know we don't want to go down memory lane on pooling at this point, but it was clear at the time. I remember this clearly, that there was hardly a group out there that wasn't being subsidized by Contra Costa County, which was the genesis for depooling. It made sense then. It still makes sense as far as I'm concerned now. And that was just, there was no question at the time that it was the big guy who was very much supporting the small guy.
Gail, did you
I
have
just
something?
Wanted to make a comment. I had mentioned that we could probably, I just had a quick comment. I had mentioned that I could probably rearrange some things and bring it back in 2 weeks. I want to make sure that you would be able to have Siegel Cicero's actuary available. So I will need to consult with them on their availability. But if we're not able to bring it back in 2 weeks, then I would expect that we would bring it back shortly thereafter.
Thank you, Gail. Any other discussion? So we can get Candace to LAFCO. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to call for a vote.
One of their planners, and so we have.
I'm sorry, Candace. I didn't hear you. There was static.
I'm sorry. I'm in two meetings now. So yeah. I'm voting yes, and I will see you all in 2 weeks.
Thank
Bye,
you,
Candace.
Benley.
Yes.
Gordon?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Kroll? Louis?
Yes.
MacDonald?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Smithy? Yes. And Watts?
Yes.
Motion passes. The item will be deferred for 2 weeks or shortly thereafter. I'd like to thank both chiefs for their time and their presentation before the board. Thank you.